Hi, you're listening to Fullcraft. I'm the Delilah of the occult scene, Aaron Oberon.
And I'm Temperance.
And today we're going to be talking about who put the folk in folk magic.
What is folk magic? What is folk magic? What's your opinion on what folk magic is? I mean, you know, there's like the standard folk magic is the magic of the people, but it goes deeper than that. And I had the benefit, the pleasure of rereading a portion of The Truth About Witchcraft Today, which has been sold like 200,000 times plus more, somewhere in that range. And The Truth About Witchcraft Today, as written by Scott Cunningham in 1988, was that there were only two forms of witchcraft, and those forms were folk magic and the ancient art of Wicca. So, you know, based on that take, I was like, okay, I see your face. They can't see your face, but I see your face. Yeah, but it was a great take. And it went on to, you know what, let me just read you a little excerpt. Okay, so this can be found on page 62 and 63. And this is how it, this is what it reads. So I just want your take, your opinion. I'm actually going to do a whole critical analysis of this and post it as a major blog post. But let me read to you again, page 62. Folk magic is but half of what is termed witchcraft. The other half is the religion known as Wicca. There are at least five major ways in which Wicca differs from other religions. These are worship of the goddess and god, reverence for the earth, acceptance of magic, acceptance of reincarnation, lack of proselytizing activities. Then it goes on to say, Wiccans revere the goddess and the god. Current Western religion, Wicca's feel, doesn't say Wiccans, it says Wicca's feel, is out of balance. Deity is usually referred to as god, as opposed to goddess. God is the god, the father is a common term. The concept of male saviors is directly tied to Christianity. The representatives of these organizations, priests and ministers, are usually male. Western religion focuses much of its attention on maleness. The Wiccans are different. They see nature as a manifestation of the divine. Because of this, they argue that a male divinity revered without a female deity is only at best half effective. Both sexes exist in nature.
I'm going to take a deep breath. And then address all of that. Okay. Let's start with Mr. Cunningham. It's a really ethnocentric take, right? Meaning it's very centered on his experience and very much makes comments about how Wicca is different from other religions while just stating how it's different from Christianity, right? And I think this is what a product of its time, but also how relevant for today. Because the opposition to Christianity, which is someone who is a recovering Southern Baptist, who was sent to a conversion camp adjacent situations because I was gay as hell. I get, right? We have our religious trauma and our religious baggage. But it is impossible to have the discussion surrounding folk magic without the conversation about how important Christianity is to that throughout, I normally would just say broadly, you know, American folk magic, but I mean around the world in saying so because of colonialism. So I would say that the take that Mr. Cunningham has is wrong for a couple of really obvious reasons. One, witchcraft is not a combination of Wicca and folk magic. That's just wrong. I don't know how else to say it other than it's factually inaccurate. And also, there's a lot of witchcraft that doesn't involve folk magic, and there's a lot of folk magic that doesn't involve witchcraft. And then also just this idea that Wicca is an ancient religion. We've already talked about that. We know it's not true. So that's that. Big X through all of that. I would hard disagree with so much of it that it would be impossible to break down every single point of it. Genuinely, going to what is folk magic, how do you find it? It is, again, it's really hard because it's going to be a little ethnocentric, right? Like, if I were to make a big academic definition, we would just be rehashing the same things over and over again. We would be saying folk magic is the magic of the people. which always raises for me, okay, who are the people? Yes. Because I think in today's kind of folk magic scene and the conversation surrounding it, at least in the spaces, those of us who exist outside of a kind of lineaged folk magic, I would say, who did not grow up with a structured form of folk magic, maybe we have little tidbits here and there. We are often trying to reintroduce folk magic into our lives. Mm-hmm. And that's where our research comes into it. That's where podcasts like this come into it. We're oftentimes reaching out into the world and looking for folk magic. Who's doing the folk magic? Where is it coming from? And it can cause a lot of really interesting things. A, again, the uncomfortability with Christianity, because people start looking into folk magic. And I'm going to come at this very much from an Anglo background, right? Mm-hmm. I'm a honky. I'm looking for things that are coming out of a very American, very white cultural perspective and cultural lens. So oftentimes we're looking at those prayers, we're looking at those little bits of the Psalms, we're looking at very, very small actions that are totally glossed over, typically within a single family or someone's upbringing, right? So there's that. This aversion to Christianity where in the witchcraft scene, if someone's introducing themselves to folk magic, and I have seen this, I don't know that it's quite as bad as it used to be, where it's just like, I'm just going to take this and completely ignore the Christian stuff, rewrite all of it, and still claim it is the same super traditional thing. Because obviously, no one who's practicing folk magic genuinely actually felt they were Christian, because this is secretly witchcraft. Like, that, it's a whole narrative that is very, very incorrect.
Well, you know, going off that, so I recently posted something on the internet that was like, the Bible is not exclusively used by hoodoo practitioners, which is a take that goes around the internet very often. That's just, you know, simply not true. So I am so upfront with everyone about what I do and what I don't do. I practice Irish American folk magic, which is, and you know, I've recently started tacking on the American part there, because for a long time I was just calling it like Irish folk magic. But I live in America, I'm from America, and even though my background, my familial background, the things that I do were from Irish people, I'm on the American continent, and that is inherently changing the flavor of what I do and how I do it. So, you know, regardless of that, you know, I practice Irish American folk magic. There's a lot of heavy elements of Catholicism that are included in that. And so, you know, to say, okay, well, the only people that are using Psalms are hoodoo practitioners, we're doing a big disservice both to the hoodoo community and to literally everyone else in America, that you, because you don't have to be a pagan to use witchcraft, and you don't have to be a witch. I mean, there's definitely mysticism and acts of magic that exist outside of what could be deemed quote unquote witchcraft. So we do a big disservice to the community at large by saying, oh, this is all witchcraft. And if it's using the Psalms, it's all hoodoo.
Yeah, that's just a super weird take in general. And I think it comes out of that place where, again, for all the rejection of Christianity, so many people are still trapped within a Christian worldview. It's hard to balance those things out, respecting the roots while without being blinded by them, because people will reject concepts of Christianity, go to witchcraft, convert, whatever you want to call it, and then still have this concept that's very, very Christian in nature, very doctrine in nature. All magic is witchcraft, because magic is bad. Witchcraft is bad. Something we will eventually be talking about at length.
I'll touch on that later.
Right. Witchcraft is bad, especially through a Christian lens, but that's part of the definition of witchcraft, is that it's malefic magic. And folk magic oftentimes is combating that, but it is still seen by the clergy as magic. And we could get into like the Cotton Mathers of it all, the where even magic that is utilized to oust, oh, I guess I should bring context into that. Cotton Mather's is the person basically responsible for the Salem witch trials, right? Someone who was high ranking in the community wanted to oust the potential witches in Salem, and made a witch cake, which involves baking urine into a cake and then having dogs eat it. And Cotton Mather's directly confronted her and said, you can't use witchcraft to hunt out witchcraft. So there's this very hard line, of course it's puritanical, but still there's this very hard line that the utilization of magic is in fact witchcraft, right? And we know as practitioners of folk magic, that is not true. And when that is something that we need to not parse out, we need to stop that narrative of all magic is witchcraft, because it isn't.
Mm-hmm. I would like to just point in here real quick, just like while you're on that. Mm-hmm. Folk magic does not originate in the Americas. So it goes with, I think, where we're about to go with where I think this conversation is going, just on the basis of that, when people use scripture, biblical scripture in folk magic, we have record of that predating the American colonies. We have that in England. We have that in Europe. So, you know, as people who are doing this to the take, Americans like to center themselves in all of these conversations. We do just like to center ourselves. And so, you know, hoodoo is a diasporic American byproduct, Appalachian folk magic, Penn Dutch hex is another very well-known. Those are like the kind of three biggest. If you were to say, okay, what's folk magic? People are going to give you one of those three just right off the bat, because those are easy grabs. Hoodoo is an easy grab because people know the name. They know what it looks like, or they think they know what it looks like. Appalachian folk magic is an easy grab. It's been in vogue for a few years. People think they know what that looks like. And the Penn Dutch hex signs, you know, what is called quote unquote powwow. And we can get into that. That could be its own thing. But, you know, powwow magic is also a very well-known system of folk magic in North America.
Right. And so that kind of leads into two points. One that I did want to quickly say is like, hoodoo existing in America being a system of magic that exists as a form of survival of slavery specifically, right? And has evolved within specifically Black American communities. Not that I'm an expert, not that I can really talk on it, but what I can say, which is pretty heavy parlance out there, it exists in the exact same community where you have other folk magic systems like the Hexen, the quote-unquote Appalachian folk magic, which in and of itself is not as much of a monolith as people like to make it seem, and more broadly, Southern magic, Southern folk magic.
With a lot of Creole influence, mm-hmm. There's a lot of land tied, like physical land tied into folk magic that people like to gloss over. And it's like, I'm practicing folk magic. I'm putting, you know, two sticks together and I'm going to tie them with red string. Where did the sticks come from? Why are those sticks relevant? In folk magic, if you're using a tree, there's something deeper there. Did you grow the tree yourself? Did you water the tree? Is this like something that you're familiar with? Or is it superstitious? Because folk magic does have an element of superstition that a lot of other quote unquote like high magic or high magic adjacent pathways don't have.
Right. The ceremonial aspects. And here's the interesting thing. We're going all over the place, but I think we are hitting some important things, which is oftentimes when we're talking about folk magic, the term folk magic specifically exists within an English construct to counter another well-known form of magic, which would be ceremonial or quote-unquote high magic. I don't know a single person today who still calls it high magic. I only hear ceremonial. This is often where we find the grimoires at use, but there's also a really, really long tradition within, like, cunning folk of using grimoires in a way that they might not necessarily have been intended to be used, kind of picking things apart, putting them together, and making them less ceremonial in nature in a way, mm-hmm. especially with things like the Petit Albert or the Black Pullet, kind of really, really taking these grimoires apart and making them work. Or even the Keys of Solomon, which is super well known. It's one of the most famous grimoires, arguably, in the English-speaking world.
Mm-hmm. And Ripper's work has come too. Like, a lot of folk practitioners started using squares, like that, you mm-hmm. know, Agrippa assigned.
Yeah, and they're easy. That's I think what that is a huge thing that comes down to it and is a misconception. Folk magic is, and I never actually gave what I would define as folk magic. Folk magic is practical, applicable, and potentially daily used magic that assists in the needs of a person's daily life. It could be community, but I would say from my experience, from what I saw growing up, and of course, I don't have any like grand tradition of folk magic in my family, at least not on the surface. But what I saw were little things here and there to make the day go by, to make ends meet, to put food on the table. And I think that is where folk magic differs from not just ceremonial, but also sometimes witchcraft and sometimes even more ritual-based practices, because it is a lot. Yes, there is an element today for us about communicating and connecting with spirits. But folk magic, like you much earlier mentioned, does not have to be spirit model, no, right?
It does not have to be spirit model. Most practitioners today take it that way, though.
Right, and I would say I certainly do myself, but I don't think when my mom is praying over a pitcher of sweet tea to just get everyone to stop fighting and calm down when they drink the tea because it's going to cool them down, like a little bit of sympathetic, a little bit of please, dear God, help us. I don't think that, okay, maybe she is appealing to God, but she's inadvertently using the sympathetic characteristics of cold iced tea to cool the temper. And it's a little bit more about those kind of, if we want to call them associations, or what's the hot ticket word that we all get? Correspondence, yeah. That I always get mad about, and then I can't even remember when I get them.
I don't like the word correspondence. Look, hot take, and I'm going to derail us again. I feel like all of my inputs have been derailments. But my hot take is that you can't use the word correspondence if you're not corresponding with the thing that you're using. That's my take.
Right. And my problem with it is just normally it's so blind, right? We read something in a book, the royal we. Something gets read in a book, and that just becomes fact without going into that deeper aspect like you were talking about earlier. But the part of the conversation that I'm really interested in, and it's not a question that I have an answer to right away, is how do we keep folk magic relevant while also being honest? And what I mean by relevant is a lot of the times we, as a community, again, I'm using a lot of royal we's here and a lot of generalizations, but I think it's something that we have in this conversation, in this community. There's a lot of hyperfixation on keeping things correct. Now, I'm raising my hand here because I am the kind of person that is very heavily sourced, has a lot of sources, is always going to go back to, you know, this is found on this page of this page, right? And it comes out of this cultural context, X, Y, and Z. At the same time, I don't like to be married to doing something that is not going to make sense for me. A lot of Southern folk magic revolves cattle, livestock, butter. There's a lot of butter magic in the world, you know, and how does that relate to me? It really doesn't. So when you're one of these people who, like me, you're searching for folk traditions, and there is no central tradition, right? Southern folk magic is just that, Southern. Do you know how big the South is? It's fucking huge, depending on who you talk to, and covers so many different, not just cultures, but counties, towns, that where things change from place to place. And there is not this lineage. We don't have the benefits of having like a Hexenmeister who is passing things down. We don't have the benefit of a cunning man, cunning woman who has a book that they can pass down. We are just kind of piecing superstitions together. We're piecing things. For me, it's going on Florida memory. Right? This is an archival website where I'm constantly looking for like, where are these little grains of folk magic in this place? It is going through my family and pulling little things out like teeth from them to figure out, you know, just what are some of the weird things that our family has done over the years? And piecemealing, like a little magpie, getting things together. And then finding out how much of it actually can relate to me. And when I find things that don't relate to me, but I still want to stay rooted, that's when I start getting experimental. And this is a conversation that I've had with a couple of people, which is, I always think that we should be honest with our experimentality, which I wrote a whole fucking book on it. You know what I mean? Where It's literally all experimentation, and I say it super upfront, and people still get really confused about that because we're not used to it. If someone is experimental, they act like they're not being, right? Mm-hmm. Because that is not as lauded. It's not as respected to be experimental, because then where's your lineage? Where are things coming from, right? And there's a lot of baggage that comes with that. And it comes back to me of, is it still folk magic? I already have an opinion on this. Is it still folk magic if we are changing things within it? And before I can even get an answer out from you, because I'm male presenting and that means I dominate the conversation. Yes, in my opinion. And you and I have joked privately about like new metal and new folk magic and new folk magic, where I really think that we should start just claiming new forms of folk magic, right? Like, there have been debates and arguments all over the internet about like utilization of spray bottles as cleansing. And I'm like, it's fucking smart. Do it. What's the difference between putting an aspersion on a like palm frond and sprinkling around your house, which is something I do, and having a spritzer, you know, a nice little spritz bottle? What's the difference? What is functionally and magically the difference between those two things? Not a lot. But it's the aesthetic that gets people all bunched up in it. You know what I mean?
If you deeper than that. I do think it's deeper than that. I'm gonna interject you because if I don't say this now, I will forget it. I think it goes deeper than that, because going back to when you were talking about lineage and folk magic and being experimental and whether you can or cannot be experimental, it is my sternly held belief that people don't want to seem crazy for having the belief and experiences in which they're having. And if they have a tradition, they can be like, I'm doing this thing, but look, people have been doing it before me. I'm the first one to try it. They validate their experience, they validate their magic, and they validate their spirituality off of someone else. And I think that's just a horrible place to be. So if you're telling me, you know, if the question is, you know, can it, whatever, are we being honest? If we're being honest with ourselves, your magic should be experimental. It should be fresh. It should be new. It should include new things. You know, going back in the past, if we look back at older folk magic, like you were saying, a lot of it has to do with cows. A lot of it has milk elements there. But, you know, there's a lot of folk magic that just does not make sense today. Would not make sense. You would not do it. You read it in, because there are books that have, especially like Penn Dutch, it's not exactly powwow, but it's just like of the region. There are these books, they're like yay big. They're massive. They're like 8x11 thin, and they just have all these wild spells in them. And you're like, wow, none of this really makes sense. Folk magic evolves. It grows as people grow. It advances as people advance. And when we learn something new, that gets incorporated in. Folk magic can include science, should you choose to. Doesn't have to. But just because you're doing magic, it doesn't exclude science. And science doesn't exclude magic. So, you know, there's so many elements there that you don't have to validate what you're doing by having a lineage. And so if you're just like, oh yeah, I practice folk magic, you can just end it there. Someone will be like, what kind? Folk magic. And you don't have to validate whether, you don't have to be good at everything. And I think that's kind of like what I'm kind of getting down to is like, people come into witchcraft and they think, I have to be good at this. I have to learn this. I have to know everything. And you don't, right? Like, you're allowed to just do things because you like them, because you enjoy them, because it's something that gives you pleasure. And you know, witchcraft goes deeper than that. Magic goes deeper than that. But folk magic is, you're allowed to be bad at it. You don't have to be like, oh, I practice folk magic and everything always goes right for me. You're allowed to be fucking dog shit at it. As long as you are getting something out of the act, it doesn't matter if someone else before you tried the exact same spell. Folk magic is the land of UPG. Just simply is.
I think in a lot of ways, just that idea of you can be dog shit at magic, just who cares, just do the magic. It really resonates with me as someone who is a self-taught artist who is constantly worried about being horrible. And rather than consider, like, just mulling it over my head a million times how bad I might be and how I'm not as good as someone else. I just do the goddamn thing. And I think that that's a really good thing. You don't have to be the best practitioner in the world, because you're also not going to get better if you continue to put yourself in that spiral. But you said this is a hot take. I'm waiting for the hot take aspect of it. I don't think you're disagreeing at all, really.
There's going to be people that are listening to that and going to be like, what the fuck? But if you're saying what the fuck, that means you never read my book and you've never been around my content, because that's not a new take for me. But, you know, you're allowed to be dog shit at magic. And people are going to, especially like the ceremonialists, if there's any that listen to this, God forbid, if there's any that listen to this, they're going to be like, that's not true. But you know what? I had a ceremonialist try to hex me months ago. And when I tell you that I won $500 off a scratch off, just because you have theater in your magic doesn't make it effective or strong.
Gag. I would also, well, and I would also say that theater and magic, as in like, that brings up a whole different thing for me.
That could be an episode in and of itself.
No, it really could, because I actually would say that the elements of theater out, and I'm totally coming at this from a perspective that is not within ceremonial magic, because I see where you're saying with theater, but in terms of like play and theater within magic, I actually think that's really powerful.
But that doesn't make it powerful.
It's different. It could. That's my argument, is that it could.
We will have a debate on that another time. We'll put it on the topic list.
Yeah. All right, writing it down, theater. But I think when we're trying to have this conversation, it's been a long, winding road, and it's become a little bit of a cliche at this point, but it truly is a crooked path, right? We're trying to answer a lot of questions that we don't have the answer for. We're having conversation. We're debating with one another. What's the nature of folk magic in a day and age where we're kind of disconnected from it, because so much of the folk record is focused on things that aren't super relevant? You know, even our parents didn't have cell phones. They didn't exist. Hell, I mean, growing up, I didn't have a cell phone until I was a teenager. But that changes everything. And yeah, so many people are so adverse to magic that involves technology. But what is a spell that keeps butter churning correctly? That's magic affecting technology. Everyone thinks technology means silicone and glass plates, but a butter churn is advanced technology. So this is the point that I'm trying to kind of get home and not even answer necessarily, but to start having conversations around, which is folk magic can evolve. Let's just say where it's coming from. And maybe there's a better term for what I'm talking about than folk magic, because I didn't want to do a ton of academic research going into this. I wanted this to be a very genuine conversation about my current perspective, your current perspective. There might be academics sitting in an armchair who have better words for these right now, but we're real people having a lived experience who, on one hand, want to keep traditions alive, maybe in some part for that, no, look, I'm not crazy, this is an older thing, but also because it's heritage, it's culture, it's existing, it's, you know, tried and true, probably wouldn't be passed down if it wasn't at least a little effective, right? Combined with the, God damn it, I don't need 12 butter spells. I need to figure out how to make sure that when I electronically submit my resume, that it's still going to be just as eye-catching as everything else, you know? Mm-hmm. Are spells to affect algorithms? Is that folk magic?
Yes.
Can it be folk magic? How do we make that?
You know what? Here's the thing. And without even getting too in-depth on it, I think that at the end of the day, there's going to be the conversation. And it's such a bad term, right? Because the terms high and low magic come from a really bad place historically. But in terms of when the ceremonialists did what they did and they were like, we're better than everyone, we're doing high magic and everyone else is doing low magic, I don't think folk magic in general should be constrained to just a historical setting for folk magic. If you have done it, if you made it, if you worked it, I don't see why it couldn't be considered folk magic. That's my opinion. I don't think it has to be recreatable. I don't think it has to be verified through multiple sources. If you do the spell once, you wrote the spell, you made it, you did your little thing, you prayed your little psalms over it, or you cursed someone using the Jesus cursing the fig tree. Whatever you did, you have made the spell. It worked for you. That's good enough for me as a classification.
I would agree, but I would also say that it's worthy not to be in an echo chamber, because I do know I've had the conversations with people who have said, like, no, that's not folk magic anymore because you've made it yours and it's just a personal spell. And I see where they're coming from. I might not agree with it, but I can see where they're coming from because it is an ongoing and evolving conversation. And that's why I say, like, maybe there is a better term out there. Maybe, you know, but I, at the same time, I don't believe folk magic should be frozen in time, because that's not historically accurate either. It never has been. It's a living tradition.
It's not a recreated tradition. It evolves and it grows, and it will keep evolving, it will keep growing. So I have a question for you before we wrap it up, and I think this is a super relevant question because it is going to showcase, hopefully will showcase, how broad and varied folk magic is. If you had to say, out of everything that you've ever done, all the spells that you've ever cast, all the things you've ever read, what is the thing that you are just gravitationally, naturally kind of gifted towards, not dog shit at the first time you tried it? What are you kind of just good at in folk magic?
Job spells. Employment.
That's a solid one.
And that comes out of lived experience. There were two that came to mind. The other one is hexing, but that sounds so edgelordy. But I do base that response off of getting verification through the real world, right? But it's hard to get a damn job. It really is. And it's really hard to get a job where you're not going to go absolutely bonkers at and just lose your shit. And being able to get a job is something that has been insanely critical for me, and helping other folks get jobs that weren't going to kill them has been really important. So yeah, employment magic, if we want to like create that category, has probably been the one that is really solid. And you could break that down and maybe also be the fact that when I'm putting in the effort to do a spell for employment, which does take a lot of moving parts, it also means that I have the energy and dedication to make sure that my resume is top notch, that I, you know, maybe I've shaved a little bit more that month and I've gotten out and gotten some new clothes because I eat well and my stomach shows, you know what I mean? So there's a combination of two things there, but I would definitely say employment, 100%. So I want to lob that right back at you. What is the thing that you feel like you are good at?
I find that I am kind of naturally, gravitationally gifted with fertility magic, which is funny to me because I will never have another child again. But I have assisted many, many, many people over the years in either getting pregnant or maintaining a healthy pregnancy or safeguarding mother and child during extremely high-risk pregnancies. Learning doulaing is something I might be interested in the future, but it's not something that is in my current pathways. But yeah, fertility magic has been kind of my biggest, and not like fertility, not sex magic, very, very different. I'm very good at the act of creating new life, not the sex part that goes with it. So the magic that involves getting pregnant, staying pregnant, post-pregnant. Also, very good at cursing as well, but that's a little edgelordy, and that's a developed skill. I was not good at it the first time I tried.
And I wonder if there's also an emotional aspect to that, right? Where cursing is something that comes out of feelings. Yeah. Very rarely are you like very I mean, unless you're doing it on someone else's behalf, and then you have the kind of hat of like, I wonder what I can do to this person because it doesn't have shit to do with me. But most of the time when you're doing hex work, you're doing it, any kind of baneful work, you're doing it out of a place of like, I'm going to fucking show you. You fucked with the wrong one. You fucked with the wrong family. So, and fertility, employment. These things are so a part of the human experience, at least under capitalism, when it comes to employment, right? And I think it's interesting because fertility magic is something that's ubiquitous. And employment isn't necessarily ubiquitous. It does show up a lot in other traditions, but in Southern folk magic, so much of it is about agriculture. But what was the job of choice that was recorded in terms of folk magic? Agriculture. So there wasn't as much of a need for that. And those needs change. So we have to change. The things that we do magically when we don't have other options change.
Mm-hmm. So that is a conversation on what the hell is folk magic anyways? Maybe that's clarified some things for you guys. Maybe you're left with more questions. I feel like I could keep talking on this topic, to be quite honest. And if we hadn't set a personal goal of trying to keep ourselves within a time limit, I could definitely go on for like another hour of what I think folk magic is or what it isn't and what it does or doesn't include. But at the end of the day, you don't have to agree with me. You don't have to agree with Aaron. You're allowed to have an opinion that differs from both of ours. I don't think it should matter as long as you're out there practicing the magic. I don't want to hear your opinion if you're not practicing.
Very that. My like closing thought is very, very similar. You don't have to agree with us because it is an ongoing conversation and it is evolving.
We might change our opinions from now, like 2 months, we might revisit this and be like, you know what? I disagree with what I said.
Yeah. There's part of this conversation where right now I'm like, that makes me rethink things because I don't want to be the person who's not willing to evolve. I preach so much about experimentation, and I feel just like you. We set that personal goal, and I feel like I'm almost about to get us right back onto the tracks, right on. But no, this is something that I think should evolve, and I think it's something that we should come back to. Like, the folk debate 2022 has taken place, and I don't think it's the last time we're going to conversate about it.
No. Well, this is folk craft, so we can talk about it every episode if we want to.
True that.
So this has been folk craft. Aaron, where can the people find you?
I'm on the Instagrams at Aaron Oberyn. I am also in book places. You can find my book, Southern Cunning. It's cute. It is pink, depending on at what point in time they got the book, because they just fixed the cover I discovered.
Mine is brown.
The first printing, I don't know how many hundreds, but like the first printing of it, they were pink. And so my copies that I got as an author copy, they're all pink. And then I told them, hey, if you look in the file, it's not pink. It's a brownish tan.
A tan, yeah.
Yeah. And so they fixed it. They sent me another edition that were in that tan. But then for the first year, when I would go into the store, if I would happen to see it in there, it was pink. So there's still some very like niche pink ones out there. But now I did go back into a Barnes & Noble recently and found that they've got the tan down finally. I don't know what happened there. Anyway, that's where you can find me.
And I'm Temperance. You can find me at Wild Woman Witchcraft on Instagram. I'm Temperance Alden on Twitter. My book, Year of the Witch, is available everywhere books are sold. But more importantly, my calendars. Ooh. I have a wall calendar and a desk academic planner that have come out to complement Year of the Witch. The artist that worked on it is so amazing. All the art in there is so fantastic. So those are also available for pre-order right now. They came out in April. And those will begin, the calendars for 2023, and the academic planner starts in July of this year. So those are also under the name Year of the Witch. And
very luxurious.
I know. I'm so excited. The art is so pretty. I'll have to send it to you. I don't think I've sent it to you before, but
no.
It's really cute. So thank you for listening to Folkcraft, and we'll see you later.
Bye. Have fun.